That's why small ball exists the way it does. That's why you've got guys like Chris Boucher are starting to flourish. I just mentioned him. But Chris is a tall dude. He's 180 pounds. Like if he, if he were in the paint, the ugliest release, but he hits shots. If he were in the paint with Shaq in 1995, you'd be calling the police. Like there would be a murder on the court, and you'd have to find a way to determine whether or not there was guilt involved. But Shaq doesn't exist anymore. Like, that's the crazy thing about where the game is today. Shaq, I still think, would be incredibly effective. But you'd have to build a team around Shaq and play a very different style than what everyone else in the NBA is playing. You know, and I wonder if there can become another guy like that who will shift this back in that direction, where it's like, we have to defend it. They're just throwing it into the paint all night, and I can't have a guard switch on Shaq. He's going to kill the guy. Right. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. What's happening, Ray?
Yeah, you know, nice day out here. So,
there you go.
You know, busy, got lots going on. I'm just listening a bit there, and so through the analytics of it, of course, what helped change all that is that they found, like, the two-point basket just clearly wasn't, because the guys could shoot the three better, that the two-point basket wasn't as valuable.
Right.
So they just started spreading out and look at the, you know, the size of these monsters that can, they shoot a three, and their athleticism. They get around the court and they're like, "Yeah, wait a minute, we don't even want a 320 pounder that stands under the hoop. I don't want that anymore."
Yeah.
So it's weird, isn't it? Because we talk about how would Mario Lemieux do today, and we can all debate it 100 different ways, but like, how would Shaq, who would he play against?
Honestly, I don't know. It's a good question. Like, there's still some bigs in the league, clearly. There's some big, but you look at a guy like Jokic, who is now the modern-day center,
right?
And Jokic is jacking threes and passing the ball like crazy. And Shaq was just a demolition man. Like, throw it into the paint and get the hell out of the way. Like, guys were terrified of being stuck in the paint with Shaq. And you're right, I don't know how it would work today.
It kind of worked both ways. Like, no one can cover Shaq, but Shaq can't cover anybody else either.
Exactly.
And Shaq so he'd get down there, the hack-a-Shaq would start right away.
Yep.
He'd hit 51% of his free throws, and then he'd have to try and defend these gazelles.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that was
It's a really interesting discussion that, you know, to try and even picture him playing in, like, somebody like him in today's game. Like, what would Dikembe Mutombo do?
Just good point. Try to block shots and, yeah, but Rudy can get out and block the perimeter. Now it's all you got to
run.
You have to guard the perimeter a little bit, right? Like, you're going to get dragged out there at some point. Like, Joel Embiid is a massive dude. Embiid's probably the closest thing to the conventional, like, massive center, but he can hit threes, he shoots threes, and if you get him out into the perimeter and he's up against a big, he might be able to guard him, right? Like, he might be able to guard you. Mutombo couldn't do that. Shaq couldn't do that.
And those were the dominant, you know, players of their era,
right,
among them in their position.
Well, to transition into hockey, I think the equivalent conversation would be, can you build like an old school tough team in today's game? Like, back in the NBA, if you're going back to the 80s and 90s, can you build a team just of monsters that are going to own the paint, protect the paint, slow the game down, half-court basketball?
Detroit Pistons,
exactly. Yeah. Can you build a team in the modern-day NHL of guys who are 6'2 and up, 2'10 and up, not the fastest skaters, but mean, nasty, looking to pick
LA
fights?
LA Kings, man.
Can it happen? Can it work?
Well, I guess that's the closest equivalent, isn't it? Is LA when they won their cups. Mm-hmm. Like, those guys were beasts. And you know, if I remember their power play, you know, like, which I always look at is the collection of their skill guys, it was like running uphill. Every time they got a power play, the only thing that happened was 2 minutes got off the clock. They never scored.
Right.
And then they'd go back to 5-on-5, and they'd just grind people into dust. And then they'd continue on. Their skill player, was, you know, of course, is Kopitar, and Kopitar's big. He's a big dude. But, man, a lot of things would have to come together to make it work. My first thought is, no, you can't. They wouldn't be able to keep up. The rules are different. You couldn't slow people down. You'd be chasing the puck all the time. You'd lead the league in hits, but you'd never have the puck.
I think you're right.
What do you think about then? Daryl Sutter did that to great effect in L.A. Do you think he tries to bring something like that to Calgary? I mean, things have changed. Personnel, the team's different, right? Like, how do you think he approaches Calgary then?
Well, I mean we know this is that. You know, he likes to play a certain way.
You think? Right?
And so, what are you going to get Johnny Gaudreau to do? The guy weighs 155 pounds.
Yeah, not what Kyle Clifford did.
Right. So, like, I think Daryl's got that thing about him that, you know, he comes off like the hokey old farmer and, like, he doesn't pay attention. And the guys in L.A. told me they couldn't believe, like, how into analytics he was, which just shocked the heck out of me. I'm like, really? Like, I can you even make that picture? And I couldn't. But I think Daryl's got, I mean, my guess is he's got a couple of tenants that are, this is it. You're playing this way. You know, it's direct. It's physical when you can be. You know, you're fighting for loose pucks. All the things that Calgary doesn't do. Or they do them once in a while. Like, I think that's part of what he does. But I think he's got to be smart enough to know that the game's different. The players are different. The players he has are different. And so, like, to try and coach like LA would be, in my mind, would be a losing proposition. You don't have the same pieces.
No, you don't. With Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, we were teeing up the Leafs-Vancouver two-pack of games with the expectation the Leafs would carry over what they did in Edmonton, and Vancouver was in trouble and obviously had not been playing well. And then Thatcher Demko gave them great goaltending, a couple of wins. Their big boys showed up. Besser had a good weekend, and they get their two games. They get their 4 points in reg. Yet in Toronto, I don't think the mood has shifted. I don't think anyone is panicking, nor should they.
One more game, Hazy.
Yeah, we're probably one more game away. A blowout to Winnipeg tomorrow.
Wednesday morning.
We've been down this road before. We know well enough how things work. But the conversation we've been having is one that's been consistent with the season. Like the idea that the lineup is in flux and could change at some point. And I think Thornton came into the spotlight, you know, in the two games in Vancouver. And maybe more so because Matthews appears to be in a position now where he could use a little bit of help, right? He's not 100%. He's grinding a little bit more. This is where you lean on your line mates a little bit more, and Marner can do it for him. Jumbo didn't really look like he could. So what do you see happening here? Where do you think that goes?
Well, I think what was concerning to me when I watch it, like right away, like at the very beginning of the year, of course, you look and you're like, man, there's no way Joe speed-wise can skate with those guys. And it can be today, tomorrow, next month. It's all the same. He's not going to be quick enough to play there. He's got to play with his head. He's got to play with his hands. He's played 14 games. And, you know, they go into Vancouver in game one. He plays one shift in the third period. And then the next time he's in and out of that line, it's like it's certain that, you know, I'm assuming the paces of the game is going to quicken like it does every year. That's going to be a spot to be focused on, because it's nice to have that third line. You know, if Engvall can keep that role, you know, if he can keep that spot, it's kind of nice to have that line. But damn, Hyman's good. And, man, he does a lot of work. If you can find somebody to play there, then maybe you can keep Hyman away from them. Otherwise, he kind of looks like the spot or the guy that has to be there for me. Like, look what happened in, you know, so Marner turns over pucks on the third and fourth goal, both of them. He burped that one up on the third goal. And the fourth one, he was dead tired. They were out there for a long time. He tried to drop pass, and it ended up in the net. So they're all now, they're just a little squeeze of the stick, a little press, and they could use some help. And, like, Joe just wasn't able to give it to them. I think it's a point that you have to look at and will be continually looked at until the deadline.
Yeah, and see what they have. And they do have a lot of options, right? They got a lot of pieces that can slide up there, including Zach Hyman. And I wonder, his contract's up, and without necessarily talking dollars, has his case been helped more than anyone this year? It seems like the realization of just how important, how versatile, and how pivotal he is to making so many things work on this team has never been more apparent. Like, he seems like he's in a pretty good spot to get, you know, a decent contract out of Toronto.
Yeah, the problem I think he's going to have is he's going to get a more decent contract somewhere else. Yeah. Right.
Like, what do you think somebody would pay him, Ray, if it just, like, just... We're just spitballing here for the sake of doing it. If it's open market and somebody says, hey, Zach, do you want to come play here for X amount? What is it?
Well, it's north of four.
Oh, God, yeah.
Is it five?
I think
can't
so.
Can't be. Can't be.
You say it can't be, Mike?
I say it can't be. Like, I think between four and five is kind of where he goes.
Johnny, if you're looking at him, wouldn't you say, okay, if he's playing with Matthews and Marner, wouldn't you first start out by saying, well, I'm as half as good as them, so shouldn't I be paid half of what they make? If the reference point is William Nylander, it's like, if he's making 6.9, I got to make 5.5. I might not score 30 like him, but I'm going to get you 25 and bust my ass every shift.
When Edmonton has $22 million or $25 million in cap space this year,
they would love to have him.
Wouldn't you? Like, yeah. Oh my! If you're one of those two big guys, you're like, man, I like that. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think the problem Toronto's, you know, again, we're talking March 8th here, but like, assuming Zach continues to play at a rate kind of the same as this, the problem Toronto's going to have is Zach Hyman's not going to have two options. He's going to have about 16. Like he's going to be a desired player.
Yeah, he's worthy of that. He's worthy of that desire. He's a good player, really good player. Yeah.
And one other thing, if you're Brian, sorry, if you're struggling, say you're a team that's, you know, you're just trying to jump a step, or you're a very good team, but say you're trying to jump a step and you're trying to, you know, we always hear about that elusive culture, and you're trying to build your culture. Wouldn't you want that work ethic to be a central part of that? I would.
No, he defines those intangibles and, you know, genuinely good guy, you know, all those things that come with the package. I don't know what that's worth on a piece of paper, you know, on a contract, but his stats can back up a lot too. I mean, he's put up good numbers. It's not just, hey, he's a workhorse in the corners. Like, he's scoring goals, putting up some points. He's going to have a
compelling case. Hayes, like, who scored, like, Pat Maroon almost scored 30 with Connor McDavid. Chiasson scored 20-something with Connor McDavid. Like, you know, so he's not playing with Connor McDavid. He's playing with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. So his 24 goals, while impressive, six of which are empty netters, while impressive, like, I'm leery if I get him in a different situation playing with Dylan Larkin and try to help out Detroit.
Right.
You're going to get everything that Zach brings, which is great. Leadership, effort, energy, defense. You're not going to get 25 goals. Or the 28 goals he scored in his last 82 games, whatever the number is, because, you know, he's been in a perfect situation. Now, Edmonton's interesting because he could land in a very similar perfect instance, but most teams don't have those kind of players to put him with.
That's
well,
valid.
I mean, don't you think, Johnny, that's part of my, isn't that what pro scouts are supposed to do? Isn't that what management's supposed to do? They're supposed to look at a guy and go, yeah, and we know how many times do guys get paid off a career year, and you're like, he's never doing that again. Like, you know it. As us knuckleheads watch from the outside, we're like, that guy's never scoring 30 again. Oh, would you look at that, 6 years at $37 million. And you're like, what the hell are they thinking?
Happens all the time, and no one ever learns. No one ever learns.
Vancouver's got Louis Erickson here collecting dust. They can't wait till his contract is up. That year... That may, I'm sure there's other years, but that year may have been the worst grossest overpay ever. Of money ever. Oof. Look
Andrew
at those
Ladd,
free agent.
Kyle Pozo, David Backes, Louis Erickson.
Why can't you be saying Mike Johnson, Jeff O'Neill, Ray Ferraro, Brian Hayes?
We wish.
Because none of us would be on this phone right now.
We'd be watching it from the Bahamas.
Well, they're all still in the league. Like, Milan Lucic was a part of that crew, too, I believe. I think he signed in Edmonton. Yep. So,
hey, by the way, I don't know what you guys thought. When you watched him fight Darnell Nurse on Saturday,
man,
I was a little nervous for Nurse, and he's a tough, tough kid.
I thought the same thing. We were sitting there watching it, my wife and I. I'm like, oh, Nurse is in trouble. When he had him bent over the boards, like, just like a piece of clay, I'm like, this is really not going to be good. Like, he is a monster. And you could tell Nurse knew what he was in for, because when they stood up and the refs got in, he gave him a quick tap on the pants like, we're done, right? We're moving on here. And Lucic was like, yeah, I'm done too. We got our message across. But Nurse, to his credit, he stepped in there and he took a couple, like, bombs. And you just get thrown. It's like being mauled by a bear. Like, Lucic is just a monster. He's a monster. And
that game started out, and you're like, oh, this
two quick fights, and here we go. Yep. Battle of Alberta. And that's got potential to keep growing. They play each other a lot more. And I think at this point, all eyes are on the Boston-Washington rivalry because of the players involved in that. And we saw over the weekend, Tom Wilson got suspended 7 games for his hit on Brandon Carlo, and was not technically, like, rule 48, I believe, is the rule where it's a direct shot to the head. Did not fall in line with that. But based on the whole circumstance, based on the hit, the pace, what happened with Carlo, Wilson ends up getting 7 games. He will not protest that, so he's going to sit for 7. What do you make of the hit, the reaction, the suspension? Where do you stand on that, Ray?
Often I see a hit, and like my gut tells me right away suspension or not. It's not always right, but right away I was like, oh, that's bad. Like, that, it just looked bad. It seemed bad. It was hard and fast. You know, like, the hit was fast. And so as I'm watching it, I'm like, the biggest problem I have with it is we always hear, oh, he didn't hit him in the head first. It was, he nicked his shoulder pad, and then, so that means the hit's okay. But this time it's not. He did hit his body first, but it's not okay.
But, and Ray, so the question I have to you, if I'm Tom Wilson, and let's not, we can just, obviously, we're not going to get into a you-know-what about this, but when you're that size, I don't know how he's supposed to avoid it. That's the only question I have. He's a big man, and certain parts of the opposition's body are going to come into that way. And what I saw, I rewound it and watched it 10 times. Carlo's head, right before impact, goes down towards his chest. And I'm like, man, your head, you're putting your head downwards and putting it in a vulnerable position when a guy that's 6'5" is coming into the corner. So I really don't know what Wilson is supposed to do there.
But in a way, that's kind of my point. Like, I knew he was going to get nicked, I felt like he was going to get nicked pretty good. But the communication we get from the league oftentimes talks about when guys make a hit, they'll say, no, you see, he hit through the body. Yeah, he got to his head eventually, but he hit through the body.
Tyler
and then
Myers
this time.
Right.
Right. Like, it, but so, guys, like, it doesn't make any sense to me. It's like it's a. It's more of a gut feel rule than it should be. I'm a big proponent of a lot of the European rules. I watch these games a lot. I do a lot of them. And sometimes the penalty seems way too harsh, but lots of times it just seems about right. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't get a penalty at all and then a 7-game suspension. So that tells me there's a disconnect between the discipline committee and the officials on the ice. Wow. Because if that was a 7-game suspension, shouldn't they have at least whistled him for something?
Do you know what made it a 7-game suspension? Is the media outrage and people bitching and whining and complaining about it. And Tom Wilson's got to be out of the game and the fake outrage crowd. That's what made it a 7-game suspension. I thought Frank Saravelli had a valid point when he tweeted out, I don't even think that's a bad hit. And I'm like, you know what? I agree with Frank and I respect him a lot. But I'm not even going to go there supporting it or retweeting it because I don't need to deal with the nonsense from people out there. I think the media outrage and the fake outrage is what got him the 7 games.
Well, there's no question there. You know, the league's quite aware of the noise around it, for sure. If Wilson wants to hit like that, however, if he keeps it, and I hit 3 guys in 18 years, 2 of them by accident.
Don't kid yourself. We saw you beating that guy up with no equipment on him.
That's my ballpark right there. Some guy on the ice in tennis shoes. But if he keeps his stick down, that hit looks way different. if he leads with his stick on the ice, I don't know if you guys agree or not, that looks different. It might be a different result. It might be a different hit. But when his hands are up and he makes that hit, the guy is a steamroller. Mm-hmm. And people get hurt. And in the game today, I didn't think there was any way he was going to escape with nothing.
Well, especially considering who he is, his track record, you're just not going to get people sympathizing for Tom Wilson. It's not going to happen at any point in his career. And I think the outcome factors in, too. Carlo went to the hospital. He spent the night there. That's going to factor in. But really, it doesn't make a difference if it's one game or seven. It's the fact that they suspended a hit where they said it was boarding. And as Frank pointed out, Cervelli, it wasn't a hit from behind. That is potentially opening up Pandora's box here.
And I think that's the important point. Tom Wilson, it's hard because it's Tom Wilson. Like, if it was Jeff O'Neill or Mike Johnson or Ray Ferraro, like, it's a different kind of conversation because it's not him. But I think if you were to ask Tom Wilson and the Cap guys if that's an okay hit, I think they honestly would believe, forget about reputation, like, that's okay. Like, guy's head's down, I hit him through the chest, and, like, it's unfortunate he banged into the glass and hit his head on the glass and got hurt. But that has always been okay. And if that's no longer okay, that feels like a shift. Like, that's kind of news to them, mm-hmm. and maybe news to the rest of the league. And I think that's you talk about the videos the player safety sends around, and it's okay that the rules change and that the standards change, and that may become a suspendable hit. But it's hard to do that midstream. If the players didn't know, head down, clean hit, I glide in there, hit him in the head, hit him through the chest, he bangs mm-hmm. in the glass, he falls, I'm up for a tenth of the season, or an eighth of the season, I'm getting suspended. I think that's the disconnect. Is like, I think players, quite honestly, might not have appreciated that could be suspended for a hit just like that.
Okay, and so MJ, you bring up something that jogged for me there in discussing that. So as we talked earlier, you know, the injury with Carlo going to the hospital and clearly concussed, and damn, nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants. Yeah.
Nope, I think we lost Ray.
Nobody wants to hear it either.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. No one wants to see it. No one wants to hear your follow-up there. We'll have him follow up tomorrow because we're at the end of the road here with Ray. But I am curious what jogged his memory there, where he wanted to go. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a good point, though, Johnny, about how we never ask how the players around the league respond. It's always what does the media guy think, the fan, you know, what is the head coach in Boston, as if he's not the most biased human being on earth.
And I don't want to hear Brad Marchand saying it's gross.
Exactly.
I don't want to see TJ Oshie saying it's fine. Because we know they're biased. They're not
biased. You're biased. Let's hear from player X on Team Y.
I was doing therapy on my shoulder this morning, and there was an NHL player there, and it was just basically he really couldn't pick a side. He was like, that could go either way. It's like, because it's Tom Wilson's a factor, because the guys in the hospital is a factor. There just wasn't really a hard line on it, and he plays in the league right now. So,
but if he can't pick a side, that tells you that.
Well,
and he basically
it's a gutless stance from the player.
But he got a 10-game suspension for a hit that a player might not be sure. Oh, that's got to be a suspension.
Johnny, what do you think? Let me ask you this, Mike. What do you think would happen to Austin Matthews if that was Austin Matthews that went into the corner? What would he be looking at right now? I guarantee you not a 7-game suspension. I guarantee
no.
it.
No way.
No, you're right, because Tom Wilson's history, although not a repeat offender by salary standards, his history does play effect.
You know,
dude,
but
it was outrage. Human. Everybody was tweeting, get Tom Wilson out of the game.
It's him,
and they're like,
I heard he was a psychopath that night. Like, people saying, this guy's a psychopath. He's got to get out of the league. I'm like hang on.
Well,
like, you might not like him.
But that's another thing I'd like to get to with other players around the league, where we all grew up playing, and your size is supposed to benefit you. Like, Tom Wilson mm-hmm. being a 6'5" giant who can skate, that is a good thing. Where these rules, if we're changing them, are suggesting it's not. You know, where if he hit Carlo in a position he's technically allowed to hit him, mm-hmm. then what are we doing here? You know, there really is the potential for a slippery slope. It makes it a difficult conversation because of what happened with Carlo and because of the character involved in Wilson, which, again, I'm not going to sit here and empathize for Tom Wilson. He's thrown some bad hits in his career. He's done some things he knows was stupid. But mm-hmm. you're right, if that's Austin Matthews on player X.
$3,500 fine.
If that.
Yeah, the league max 5,400, whatever it's called, right?
Right. And that's where the league has to figure out, where are we going with this? What's going to be allowed, what isn't? Because if you're penalizing a guy because he's so big and so strong, then that's going to change the dynamics of the game as well.
I think two things. One, the league has to, whatever the standards are going to be, and if they're changing, and that's okay that they change, they should. What's the 70s is not the 80s, not the 90s, not now. That has to be communicated before suspensions are given.
Right.
You can't say, oh, you know what, we don't like them now, we'll give you 10, so everyone knows it's 10. You can't have that.
No, you can't be reactive.
I need to know the rules of the game, and then I go and play accordingly.
Yep,
the other thing, so I mean, that's rule number one. And the other thing is, I just wonder if that, if the league can get that out to the players and then have the players sign off on it fast enough. I just don't know if there has to be some sort of conversation about, you know, onus of the hitter, like in football. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not allowed to hit a guy who's kind of being engaged with another player getting tackled in certain ways.
Yep.
And growing up, we were always taught, you got a guy with his head down, trolley tracks, you hit him. Like, you hit him clean, not in the head, but you go right through him as hard as you can.
That's the only time I ever hit a guy is when he had his head down. I never hit a guy that was looking me in the eyes. You get hurt?
Of course. Why would you? Because it's going to hurt your back. You're a smart guy. Absolutely. But I wonder if that's the other part of the change. And the NFL's implemented that. Like, if Brandon Carlo's not ready for the hit because he's engaged with Verano behind you, or he's in a vulnerable spot because his head is down looking for a puck, I wonder if, you know, that's where they're headed, where that's now a hit. You can't hit a guy hard. You can bump into him because you got to get the puck back.
Well,
but you can't blow him up like we once could.
That's bridge way too far, because then you're the next layer to that is no open ice hitting, and then the next layer to that is no hitting at all.
Period.
And
no
then
hitting.
Your sport isn't what it always has been. And it's already changed a lot in some ways for the good, in some ways for the bad. But that's like, you've got an existential moment here that, because of emotion, people aren't going to see it that way. They're just going to say, Tom Wilson, hospital, suspension. And the league is not supposed to think that way. The league is not supposed to approach it that way.
But then you're okay with Brandon Carlo, Austin Matthews, Jeff O'Neill, whoever. You got your head down. You're beside the glass. You're getting hooked by someone. Someone can come down. If they hit you clean, they don't charge you. They don't get your elbows up. They don't hit you in the head. And they run you right over.
When has that not been okay? Why would it not be okay today as opposed to ever? Like, since when is a good hit not a good hit or not wanted?
We know more about brain injuries, and they're worried about them.
Well, then again, Johnny, but you can't have your cake and eat it too. Like, it's either you're a contact sport or you're not. You know, like, right. you just, it's like football. You either, you're going to have contact. We all know it.
You but go what does on football the ice, do all the time?
Nah,
football changes
you pissed
rules
them
all
off,
the time.
Nah,
yeah, but,
you pissed
but
them
not
off.
To the point where you're saying a good hit is not a good hit.
Well, what was a good hit in the NFL 10 years ago was not a good hit today.
Yes, it is. 90% of the time, it's not
a
head-on head hit.
Guy. You can't lower your head when you're tackling an open field.
That's not what you just described, though. You just described a good hit. You just said you get someone in a – yes, he may not be looking for, but if you get him shoulder to shoulder, at what point do we want shoulder to shoulder not working in this game?
That standard changes. It changes over time.
It can if you allow it to, if the league allows it to, and if they want to go in
that
direction.
And I guess that's the conversation that we're having. Like, should it? Would it? How could it? Because it does in the NFL. The NFL has changed the way that you're allowed to hit legally. What was legal 10 years ago is not legal today.
You're right about that, but in the NHL has. You could hit a guy in the head back in the day. You could hit anyone in any possible way.
Right.
That they have made those
upgrades. It's just another step in that direction if you want to go down that road.
Well,
you don't want to.
I think there's a lot of gray area there, though, in terms of what actually constitutes a healthy hit, a confirmed hit, a good hit.
Obviously.
And that's where someone's going to have to draw the line.